This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
We're here with Tim again from Rainbow Comics talking about the MCU. Tim's a big fan of the MCU, so we're going to dive into anything from the MCU from Endgame to present, and we'll also talk about what is coming for the MCU going forward. So thanks again, Tim, for coming on and sharing in all the things nerdy about the MCU.
Oh, sure, man. This is what I live for. It's like this and Star Wars and Transformers and just nerdy stuff, I guess.
Yeah, well, let's dive right in and talk about some of your favorite. And this isn't just going to be movies from the MCU. So we're including the TV stuff from Disney Plus.
We were talking about kind of the first half, I think, of Phase 4 of the MCU, which is everything that came out post-Endgame. I think Phase 4 is going to be continuing through 2023, I think, is kind of the idea.
It's Phase 4. So officially, are we officially in Phase 4?
We are officially in Phase 4.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, okay. that would have started with...
WandaVision?
Black Widow, kind of.
Okay.
Although Black Widow kind of takes place before Infinity War, but was released after Endgame, it's considered Phase 4. I like Black Widow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's dive right into what you like. What are maybe two or three of the TV series, or movies that you love?
Did we tell everybody we're going to spoil stuff?
Oh, like, yes. We're going to spoil the heck out of this. So if you haven't seen some of this stuff,
and we're talking Black Widow through Spider-Man No Way Home, like any of the Marvel properties that fall in between there, we're gonna be talking about.
So fair warning.
Yeah. So, gosh, man. I would say the biggest surprise for me from Phase 4 that I didn't know if I would love it or not was Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
Very much surprised me. I'm a big fan of Eastern action films and kung fu movies. And when I saw the trailer for Shang-Chi, I wasn't impressed. And then when I saw the movie, I realized, oh, this is Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon meets the MCU. And I absolutely loved it.
Have you seen the comics, or had you read the comics prior to that, or not?
Not really.
Okay.
I'm the white guy who thought his name was Shang-Chi.
That's why I would have said it.
So. Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I will be corrected. That's totally fine. I loved it. Like, I have a new respect for Awkwafina, the actress, that I didn't have before because I was like, who names himself after water?
Yeah.
And I'd seen her in a few things and just was never that impressed, and she really just killed it for me in the movie. She did such a good job. Everybody did a phenomenal job, and I just absolutely loved it. Everybody talks about the bus scene because it's in the trailer.
Yeah.
My favorite fight scene, though, is on the scaffolding in the side of the
building. Yeah, on that fight, the fight ring that she has. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have a lot of hope for the post-credits scene that showed, like, his sister taking over her seat in the Ten Rings. Meshing that together with everything we've been seeing with Val, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character.
Oh yeah,
I would love to see something further come from that. So that's super fun. Yeah, this is so weird because I have a list written in front of me of all of the Phase 4 stuff that's come out, and because of COVID, there's been such a weird distillation of release dates. And so I'm like, oh man, I have to actually remember what came out here. Because I said Black Widow, and that's true, but I would almost say Far From Home, I think, is probably the beginning of Phase 4. Well, no, Far From Home, I think, is the epilogue to Phase 3.
Okay.
But I don't mind talking about that either. I really love Far From Home. Falcon Winter Soldier kind of falls in the middle for me.
Okay.
And I couldn't figure out why until recently I found out there was an entire pandemic plot that they had shot and was going to be part of the show.
Oh, really?
And then COVID hit and they excised it.
Hashtag too soon.
Yeah. They were definitely like, uh-oh. And I feel like that probably was going to be more of the Bucky side of things.
Oh, okay.
Because I really felt that we got a lot of Falcon in Falcon and Winter Soldier. We didn't get a lot of Winter Soldier.
Oh, and that's because of that part
that cut out, maybe? I don't know for sure. Maybe? Some of that is speculation on my part. But you know me, I'm a vet. I've got PTSD. I've got all of that jazz. And so anytime I see that represented in a superhero property, I get pretty jazzed about it. Like Iron Man 3 is one of my favorite MCU movies. And I know I'm completely alone. I'm not saying it's the best.
Sure.
Not at all. But it is one of my favorites because it's one of the few times where I see like myself, like my personality or my brain reflected back at me. When I see Tony freaking out about stuff, I'm not going to be a billionaire.
Yeah.
With a suit of armor and Gwyneth Paltrow as my
girlfriend. Fiance, yeah.
But I do know what it's like to have gone through trauma and have that trauma dictate your entire life. And then you have to deal with that and then overcome sure. that and move on to bigger and better things. And that was the whole theme of Iron Man 3. Welcome to my Iron Man 3 podcast.
Yeah. But Winter Soldier, do you think they'll maybe, since Disney owns that, do you think they'll ever release that storyline at some point?
What do you mean?
The pandemic storyline?
Oh, no. I don't think we'll ever see it.
Okay.
I don't think that it's important to the narrative as the narrative turned into.
Did it seem disjointed, though? That
we ended up with a very Falcon-centric story, and I love Falcon, and I guess we could even call him Captain America now because he's got the shield. I just I really was hoping to see more of Bucky dealing with all of it because you've got a man who was a reprogrammed assassin for
the Soviet Union, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think it was
Cold War Soviet Union.
Okay. I really need him to team up with Yelena. We'll get to
that. Yeah, okay. Okay.
We've got Shang-Chi. Another one that I absolutely love is the most recent Hawkeye.
Yeah.
I love Hawkeye. Hawkeye as a comic really came into its own around the time the first Avengers movie came out. Matt Fraction and I believe it's David Aja, A-J-A, it might be Aja.
Aja, okay.
But I've always said Aja, I don't know. Take on me, I guess. that comic came out around the time that Avengers was coming out. And Hawkeye in the comics for a long time had just been a cocky Purple Arrow guy.
Yeah.
He's
been around since the beginning.
Since very much close to it. He was originally introduced as a villain. He'd been trained by Swordmaster, who was great in the show. And he ended up joining Cap's version of like the second iteration of the Avengers, basically. All the regular original Avengers quit. And then it was Cap leading Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, and Hawkeye, who all three of them were prior villains.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting to me. Like the Avengers were four people, three of whom are former villains, and Captain America, who is, you know, the hero.
He's the superhero.
And Hawkeye has always been very, very cocky. He ended up marrying Mockingbird in like the 80s. Our friend Bob Hall drew a lot of that stuff with West Coast Avengers.
Okay.
I love all of that stuff. And Mockingbird was one of my favorite characters. The first comic I wrote a fan letter to was Mockingbird when Chelsea Kane was writing it. I say first, it sounds like I was a child or something. Like I was in my 30s when I wrote it.
It was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, basically.
Just kidding.
I mean, it might as well have been. But no, Chelsea Kane in her Mockingbird number one had Bobby Morse, who's Mockingbird, at the Shield Medical Clinic. And just reading it, it just struck me as it felt like when I go to the VA.
Yeah.
And I wrote to Chelsea Kane, the writer, and I said, you know, thank you so much for this. It felt, again, like I'd been seen.
Oh, cool.
And she wrote that she had that set up as her.
She wrote you back?
Yeah. Oh, in the comic. Yeah. It's like,
oh, wow.
Mockingbird.
Oh, that's right. In the back.
Yeah. Mockingbird issue. It's either issue 3 or issue 5.
Okay.
I'm published in the comic.
Nice.
But,
need to take a picture of that, put it in the show notes if you want to.
No, for sure. I'll see if I can dig it up. But, she said that she based it off of her experiences at her OBGYN or something like that. But as soon as I mentioned it was like the VA, she wrote in there like, oh, of course this would exactly be like the Shield hospital and the VA are probably the same entity.
Yeah.
And so that was really cool.
Oh, okay. And they're going to, they teased, obviously, Kingpin at the end.
They didn't tease him.
Well, I know.
So let's talk about Kingpin real quick. Anyway, Bobby Morse, I love Bobby. I love Mockingbird. And the fact that we had her in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I loved her. But she in the comics was Agent 19 for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
And in the finale of Hawkeye, he gets the watch that he'd been after the entire time. And he brings it home to his wife, and she flips the watch over, and we see the S.H.I.E.L.D. symbol and the 19. So the implication is that Linda Cardellini, who's been my crush since Freaks and Geeks, I love her so much.
Oh, let's see. She's the sister.
She's like the star of Freaks.
I love that show.
She's also Velma in the Scooby-Doo movie.
Yeah, okay.
I love Linda Cardellini. But the implication is that she was Mockingbird, but her name... We don't ever hear her name as Bobby. I think it's Laura.
Okay.
In the movies and in the shows. But does it add anything? A little bit. Does it take anything away? No, not really. So Kingpin in the finale of Hawkeye, he's wearing his white jacket, but he's got a red Hawaiian shirt. That outfit specifically is from a graphic novel called, I think it's Family Matters. I don't quite remember.
Okay.
It was co-written by James Robinson and Mark Waid, and the art in it was from Gabriel Del Otto. I have that graphic novel at Rainbow Comics.
Nice.
70th and A Clock Tower here in Lincoln, Nebraska. but he's wearing the exact same outfit, and it's super duper cool. I love Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk. His intention was to play Wilson Fisk the same way he played him in the Netflix show.
In Daredevil, right?
In Daredevil, yes. The impetus behind all of that is not necessarily that the events of the Netflix show happened in the MCU. It hasn't been confirmed either way, but the idea that most, like Kevin Feige and company, have passed around is... the Netflix is basically part of the multiverse stuff where like that stuff happened, but not in the MCU. Okay. And I'm fine with that. In the Netflix shows, we don't see, like a comics accurate Kingpin physically. His emotionally, the way he speaks, the way he comports himself in the Daredevil show, 100% great. But in the comics, Kingpin is a massive force.
Yeah.
You can't stop him.
Both physically and emotionally, whatever you want to say. His personality. There we go.
Yeah, his personality. His
personality is as big as his body.
Exactly. And in the episode of the finale of Hawkeye, you've got Vincent D'Onofrio playing essentially the same character, but he's big. And when you introduce him next to like Vera Farmiga, who is a tiny person from what I can tell, having that juxtaposition between a smaller person and a large person really puts him into perspective. What floored me is when Kate shot an arrow into Kingpin's chest and you're just like, oh my gosh, did she just kill him? And he looks down and swipes it away and you're like, oh my gosh, this guy is not joking around. And then he gets hit by a car and flung into a building. And then not much later, Kate blows him up and it's so good. So that episode ends with Echo holding a gun to Kingpin, lamenting that he's the reason her father died. And then we cut away and we hear a gun go off. You and I have watched a lot of TV shows, a lot of movies. If you don't see it happen on screen, you can't put any stock in it.
Nope. Hurry up.
Yeah, basically. Also, that's a scene from the comics. Because in the comics, Kingpin killed Echo's dad. And so she held a gun to his face, pulled the trigger, and you assume he's dead. He shows up a few issues later, and he's got bandages over his eyes. The muzzle blast blinded him, but he didn't at all get killed from it.
Oh, man.
So I'm really excited for that. We're going to see more Vincent D'Onofrio. If we don't, so be it. But I'm willing to bet money that he's not gone.
He's coming back.
Yeah.
Most likely.
The other thing I really liked is going to surprise absolutely nobody, and that was Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
I loved it. Absolutely great. so great is keeping on with what we just talked about with Kingpin. We had Charlie Cox show up for like 4 or 5 seconds. Charlie Cox is playing Matt Murdock. At one point, people are mad at Peter and they throw a brick in his window, and Peter goes to grab the brick, but he can't because Matt already grabbed it. Peter's like, "How'd you do that?" And Matt says, "Well, I'm a real good lawyer." And it's very funny. That's the most we really get out of Charlie Cox in the movie. It's not a lot, but it's enough. It's enough to be like, okay, it counts. At one point in that scene, he looks over at Foggy and he says, "You are going to need a good lawyer." Part of me is hoping that maybe he'll get Jessica Walters as a lawyer, and maybe we'll see some more of Foggy in the upcoming She-Hulk show.
Some She-Hulk, yeah.
That is speculation on my part. I saw an article online that said there was a big missed opportunity in not having Charlie Cox's Matt Murdock mention something to Jon Favreau's Happy, because Jon Favreau played Foggy in the Fox Daredevil movie. And I don't know if that's a big missed opportunity. It's one of those things where we've got a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
We need to, like, Charlie Cox is not the focus of this movie. We've got a lot of stuff to do. Bring him in, tease what's happening. It makes sense. There's legal problems. We need a lawyer. This is a good opportunity to bring in Charlie Cox and get that speculation fire burning. Get him in, get him out. But I really, really enjoyed that. As far as stuff I didn't like.
Or less. I mean, it's like, hard. Yeah, like you said, you like all of this, but
there's nothing I didn't like. The things that I liked less, I think What If would fall onto the side of the things I liked less. I enjoyed a lot of the concepts. Having Chadwick Boseman's final performances as Black Panther was really good. I didn't love the animation style until I got it, and it just kind of made sense.
What didn't you like at first on the animation? Or
it seemed like I was watching a cheaply made Flash animation.
Oh, okay.
It didn't feel like I was watching like a hand-drawn 2D thing. It didn't feel like I was watching a fully 3D. It's like they were chasing the visual style of Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes, I got that impression,
but,
too.
But it felt like they didn't quite nail it. But as I watched more of the episodes, I understood more of the tone of the show.
Okay.
And I realized it was just me trying to attribute the visual style to something I recognized.
I get you what you're saying, because it wasn't quite as polished as Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I understand that.
One of my friends also was saying he, because it was coming out weekly,
yes,
he really didn't like the idea of the show seeming to be, what if this other person was this hero? Look how much better they would do. Whether it was Peggy Carter as Captain America or T'Challa as Star-Lord, like, look how they handled it better than Steve or Peter. And he didn't really like that. And then the show did kind of drift away from that a little bit.
It did.
But that's hard to tell in the moment. But yeah, so I'd say What If is one of those I didn't care much for. Also, this isn't going to surprise very many people, Eternals.
Yeah.
Really, man, I liked Eternals. I very much liked Eternals. Marvel, from the onset of the MCU, has had 3 major hurdles. The first one was the original Iron Man.
Okay.
The second one was the first Guardians of the Galaxy. And then this third one, I believe, is Eternals. These are like the toughest nuts that they have to crack. I don't think Eternals is a bad movie, but when you are setting up 11 brand new characters, you've got the Eternals, you've got Kit Harington's Black Knight character. You're setting up 11 characters and we don't have context for any of those characters. It makes it difficult. Part of me wonders in a post Disney Plus, if it wouldn't have made sense to have like a 10 episode series that focused on each of the Eternals to, you know, like give all of them a full episode to kind of understand who they are.
Because Eternals are what would you say, maybe a, not necessarily a B-class, but just not as well known as, say, Spider-Man. We don't need to explain to the audience how Spider-Man became Spider-Man.
Yeah, everybody knows. Well, and even looking at DC, right? You know Bruce Wayne is Batman.
And Superman, you know.
We don't need to see Bruce Wayne's parents kill every single time because we know his origin story. The thing is with the Eternals, I am a comic book fan. I don't know Shang-Chi. I don't really know the Eternals. I've read the Neil Gaiman Eternals because I love
you're Neil a Neil Gaiman, Gaiman fan. Yeah,
you can't not. but even then, for as much of a genius in it and as much as I admire Neil Gaiman, his Eternals run doesn't stick in my brain. I've read the current run by Kieran Gillen, and it doesn't stick in my brain.
Okay.
I've read some of the older Jack Kirby stuff and it just doesn't stick. I don't know what it is about the Eternals that just for me personally doesn't resonate. Here's what did resonate. Kumail Nanjiani playing Kingu. I feel like he stole the movie. Every time he showed up, it was great. But then in the climactic fight at the end, he disappears. He's like, I can't be a part of your whatever. But he's the Eternal who has the most ties to humanity. And so having him leave felt like you were leaving out a key point of what made the Eternals feel relatable.
Okay.
And I also felt like we had a decent villain and did not need to have Icarus's betrayal. That felt very cheap. Because we could have just stuck with the villain that we already had from the Deviants.
And leave Icarus for another time,
or even have him betray everybody, but then regret it.
Okay.
I didn't need to have like his betrayal being the crux of the third act really kind of bummed me out.
It almost sounds like they crammed, you got 11 new characters and then you throw in two possible villains. Just too much.
It was a lot to juggle. I barely know who Icarus is. So why do I care that he betrayed them? I will say my favorite part of Eternals was Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh is the best character. I know Kumail Nanjiani stole the movie. Every scene he's in, he just elevates it. Gilgamesh, I need to look up the actor who played Gilgamesh because he did such a good job. As much as I didn't care about Icarus's betrayal, I cared about Gilgamesh caring for Thena. I loved Gilgamesh. That actor nailed it completely. Best character. They have the Marvel Legends figures.
The only
Eternal you can't buy on his own is Gilgamesh because he's the Build-A-Figure. I'm not going to buy all the other figures just to have a Gilgamesh figure, but darn it, I thought about
you
it.
You might think about that.
it was really, really good. So like I said, I would say that's towards the bottom of my list, but even with it being at the bottom of my list, there's still stuff about it I absolutely loved, and there's stuff about it I admire. The post-credit scene in Eternals is the most Marvel that whole movie felt. Did you see Eternals?
I haven't seen it, so
I'm just gonna
go ahead and spoil it.
I'm gonna spoil all of it.
Yeah, spoil it.
I'm so sorry.
Let's do it.
So we've got some of the Eternals on a ship. And suddenly like a rainbow bridge portal opens up and I thought, oh, here comes
Asgard,
Thor.
Right? Yeah.
No. Pip the Troll.
Pip
the Troll, voiced by Patton Oswalt. And he is the envoy for the very special guest that he has with him, who is, oh my gosh.
Adam Warlock.
No.
No,
no,
okay.
No, no,
no. Okay.
Better. I strike better.
Just as good. Okay.
It is another Eternal. Thanos' brother, Eros.
Oh, Eros. Yeah, yeah.
Played by Harry Styles. It's perfect. It's perfect. It's so perfect. We got Star Fox. He's great. Patton Oswalt as Pip the Troll, I thought, fantastic. Perfect. Yeah, yeah. I'm into this. This is the greatest thing ever. And then Eros, who is the brother of Thanos.
Thanos, yep.
In the comics, Thanos is an Eternal with deviant genes.
Yep.
And his brother is Eros, who was the Avenger called Star Fox. And he's a very, very pretty boy, whereas Thanos is ugly and powerful. You have a very twiggy, pretty boy in Eros. And we
cocky,
understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. We understand Eros is like the god of love or whatever.
Yeah.
And to have like pop star Harry Styles playing Eros is so good. It's so very good that I freaked out. I could not believe it. It's so fun.
Would you have thought, I mean, just thinking about being in comics this long, I never would have thought we'd see Star Fox and Pip on screen.
I held out hope for Pip after Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Because Thor Ragnarok is a very, I'd say, Kirby / Starlin feeling film.
Oh, yeah.
And so I did kind of hold out hope for Pip the Troll. Never thought about Eros.
Yeah. Because I thought maybe we'd see him in Endgame, but. But yeah, it'd take too much to introduce him.
Endgame, let's be honest, Infinity War was the stronger movie, but it was nailed Endgame. The Endgame should not exist as a movie. It's impossible. I'm sure I've said this on your show before, but Endgame as a concept is unfair to film. It's just like it breaks every convention, every known thing. If you had not seen any Marvel movie and you went into Endgame, could you imagine how completely lost you'd be? That movie has no first act.
Oh, yeah, it's just
it's great. And this is my, I have 2 film degrees. I'm sorry. It's so good. I'm so very pleased with it. I still think Infinity War is the stronger of the two.
I agree. Yeah.
But Endgame is great.
Eternals, do you think there's going to be an Eternals 2 probably? Or have you heard an official?
Eternals? I think we'd be more likely to see Eternals show up in a supporting role.
Okay.
I don't know that we would. It's been Marvel's, I want to say, least successful movie. Don't quote me on that. I don't have the numbers in front of me.
You might be right, yeah.
I know critically it wasn't received well. I know a lot of people who went to go see. I think in a non-COVID world that I can't prove any of this because we don't have a non-COVID world to look at. I think Eternals would have been fun. I think it would have been a little bit more welcome. But since we've had COVID and people just want to see the Marvel stuff that they know, and this isn't a slam. I don't think people are wrong for this at all. But I think people wanted more relatable stuff. Of course, yeah. I say that and Black Widow. Would that have been more successful outside of the pandemic?
Well, I think Black Widow, though, is more well-known amongst the, air quotes here, normal people than, say, the Eternals, because she's been around so long.
And I agree with you, but I also feel like that movie got a lot of mixed to negative reviews.
Okay. Did that make your list? I guess I didn't. Where would you put Black Widow?
Firmly in the middle.
Okay.
Firmly in the middle.
Above more than Eternals or less than Eternals?
More than Eternals.
Okay.
More than Eternals. And again, tying back into Hawkeye, Yelena is great. Mm-hmm. My problem with – I didn't know this until we had Yelena. I never realized Natasha, for as great as Natasha was, and this is no fault of Scarlett Johansson – she didn't have a character. There was not much about Natasha that I cared about. Mm. I like her, and she's very pretty, and Scarlett Johansson's a great actress, but the character of Natasha was very, very lacking. And what we got out of the Black Widow movie was Yelena. And Yelena is precious, and I want to protect her forever. In Hawkeye, Natasha's death is a linchpin for Hawkeye's motivation.
Yeah. Yep.
But then Yelena shows up believing that Hawkeye is responsible for the death of Natasha. You understand Yelena. And seeing her interact with Kate is like the purest friendship I've ever seen in the MCU. Like, it's so very good. Kate loves Clint like an older brother figure, right? There's not a romantic thing, and we can talk about that someday too. That's great. But she loves him like an older brother, and Yelena wants to kill him.
Yeah.
And so you have these two people who have very differing views on Clint and who Clint means, or what Clint means to them. And they click so perfectly well. In the final episode, Kate even yells at Yelena. She's like, "Stop making me like you." And yeah. Yelena's like, "I can't help it." And there's a part of me as a film viewer and a fan of character where you want Yelena to win, but Yelena winning means Clint dies.
Yes.
And what does that mean? And can they make Yelena and Clint not friends, but end amicably? And I believe that the showrunners of Hawkeye nailed it. It's kind of a Martha moment in Batman v Superman.
Batman versus Superman, yes.
Because Clint does the little whistle and talks about how Nat just gushed about Yelena for forever, and I thought it was very good.
That was appropriate.
Yeah, and we also, Yelena's one of the few characters that we actually see what the blip was like for her when Thanos snapped his fingers. Yeah. So you see her fade away, and then the bathroom she was in changes, and then she comes back, and for her it's like this weird dizzying instant, but for the rest of us it was 5 years.
Yeah.
And just watching that trauma set in on her made me feel for her. It also makes sense in Endgame when Natasha sacrifices herself and she says, I don't have anyone to worry about. If Yelena hadn't been blipped away, would Natasha have sacrificed herself? And it's a question worth asking, and I think it's really fun.
Yeah, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Well, what about going forward now? We've kind of touched on what you like now, but what are you excited about for 2022 or 2023? What are some of the movies or TV shows that are coming out on Disney?
Very top of my list
is MCU, I guess,
is Ms. Marvel.
Ms. Marvel, okay. Marvel.
I love Kamala Khan so much.
Okay.
I love her so much. I have to double check. Like, did I say the right name? Because I have said Kamala Harris a few times. No, no offense to Kamala Harris.
Yes.
But one of them is the vice president. The other one is a fictional comic book character. And I'm very white. So I make mistakes. But no, Kamala Khan in the comics is Ms. Marvel. She just had a brand new comic come out, which you could always come to Rainbow Comics and pick up if you wanted to, because I've got it in stock. But I love Kamala. She's the point of view character for the Avengers video game that gets a bad rap. The single player campaign in that is so much fun. The story in that game is great. G. Willow Wilson, who created Kamala, was a writer on the game. It's so good. Reading the comics, I love her. It's so good. I know that they're adjusting her powers a little bit for the show. I don't know what that means. We'll see how it goes. I'm very excited for that.
What about Ms. Marvel just grabs you, I guess? You're very excited about her. What is it?
I could not put my finger on it until I saw Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Okay.
So spoilers, I guess, for Ghostbusters Afterlife. We live in a world where a lot of people scream forced diversity, right? And I apologize if I'm getting political or whatever. You can cut this out if you need to.
Okay.
But when I saw Ghostbusters, in the third act of Ghostbusters, you have kids. You have a neurodivergent girl. You've got the white boy, but you've got a black teenager. You've got an Asian kid. And kids are seeing this movie. My buddy took his 10-year-old son to go see it. And say what you want about diversity or forced wokeness or what have you. What we have now is we're showing kids you can be anything and still be portrayed on screen. That's so powerful, because when you and I were kids, nobody thought about that. You just, white guys are writing it. They're putting in white guys. I don't believe there's malice behind it. I don't believe it was ever done to be like, oh, let's exclude people. It was just a let's do this. And when Stan Lee created Peter Parker, he wasn't thinking that in 2021 we were going to have the most Spider-Man movie of all time.
Yeah,
it just wasn't a thought he had. But what we have now is a 10-year-old's going to go see Ghostbusters, and he's going to see everybody is represented. The same thing with Ms. Marvel.
Okay,
it's going to be it's the idea that a person that has a different background than me can be a hero. The Ms. Marvel comics are the most information that this, hick white boy from Nebraska has had exposure to, like, a Muslim culture. I don't know anything about it, but I've learned a lot from her comics, and she's just great. She's amazing. I love when kids come in and they want a good, like parents want a good comic for their kids, and I can be like Miles Morales, Ms. Marvel,
Stargirl.
Oh my gosh, she's coming. She's coming next month. I think it's next month. Yeah, soon. We're getting a new Stargirl series. I can't wait. But just the fact that we're breaking the mold on what a superhero is quote unquote supposed to look like or is supposed to be. We're using superheroes and fiction and movies and TV shows as a way to let people experience culture that maybe they wouldn't have experienced before. And it doesn't feel alienating. It doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like, oh my gosh, you have to be on the inside to understand this. You don't have to. And I think that's incredibly important. And I think it's incredibly exciting. And I love Kamala. And I feel like the more people who watch the Disney Plus show, which is going to be a lot of people who knew she existed but didn't know anything about her, are going to come to my store or any store or pirate the comics or whatever they want to do. But there's going to be a brand new explosive interest in Ms. Marvel. And I'm really excited to see what that means.
Nice. What else is exciting that's coming out here in the next year or two?
Guardians.
Guardians we're 3. We have the holiday special
next year. Christmas. And then in 2023, we'll have Guardians Volume 3. When is Thor? Oh, Thor's
coming. Love and Thunder. Yeah, that's coming out.
Wow. Yeah, these are staples. You know what I mean? The Guardians is a staple. Thor is a staple. Like, they're going to be good.
Oh, yeah.
But this will be, James Gunn has basically said Guardians 3 is going to be his farewell.
Okay.
So I'm curious what that means for the future of the Guardians. I'm curious what that means for the future of James Gunn.
Do you think we're going to see Adam Warlock in Guardians 3?
Yeah, he's going to be.
I thought so.
They confirmed it. He's going to be played by Will Poulter.
That's right. Okay.
Who was Jerome in Gotham. Not Joker, but Joker.
Yeah,
I never finished Gotham. I probably should.
We'll see Pip. Do you think we'll see Pip in Guardians?
Oh my gosh, we have to.
I mean, you have to, don't you?
You'd have to, especially. Oh, I don't know. I mean,
just think of. In the comics, it was Warlock and the Infinity Watch.
That was Warlock and Gamora and Drax. And
Pip and all those guys. Pip,
yeah. It would make sense, but we also, maybe they won't even show up. Maybe instead of building up the big bad over the course of post credits, maybe we'll be building up the Infinity Watch or something over the course of phase four.
Again, would you ever have thought 30 years ago
not at all. Not at all. It's so good. Other things I'd be excited about. Ant-Man, the Wasp, Quantumania, The Blade. Is Blade movie?
Blade's going to be a movie. That's interesting.
TV show, we've got Moon Knight, Secret Invasion.
Secret Invasion,
Fury stuff. And then I think before too long, in 2023, we're going to get Fantastic Four.
Yes.
And I am so curious as to who's going to be playing them, who's directing it, who wrote it. I'm very, very excited about it.
I mean, Fantastic Four. I remember before Endgame came out, people were like, oh, Fantastic Four is going to show up at the very end. I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, my big theory for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is, let's just go ahead and date when this is coming out. Doctor Strange, like the multiverse breaks, but my big theory is that Doctor Strange is going to put the universe back together and things are going to be a little bit different, which would be like how mutants have always been around, but they've never been in a Marvel movie before. But also imagine you were a group of four explorers in space and suddenly the cosmic essence of everything has been broken. What kind of cosmic rays might you be exposed to?
That's what I thought when at Endgame, when they got the gauntlet, that's when we would see everything change. But now you're saying no, Doctor Strange in the multiverse might cause that change.
It would make sense that Doctor Strange is an imperfect being. And I like the, again, this is just me. If this doesn't happen, so be it.
I love theories. Though.
I'm not going to bank my entire enjoyment of the Marvel universe on whether or not they do what I want them to do. But I like the idea that Doctor Strange puts the multiverse back together, but he couldn't do it exactly right.
And so maybe X-Men will be part of that too.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you put everything back together, and now suddenly mutants have always been here. And that's how you can have mutants integrated without having to be like, oh, we've just discovered Homo Superior. And what we can actually have a legacy of mutants in the MCU without having to explain why we hadn't seen mutants up until now.
And Fantastic Four and mm-hmm. all these other things that we want.
Yeah, exactly.
In.
So just a little bit different.
Spider-Man. We can integrate that more. And I mean, he's already in the MCU, but.
Based on how No Way Home ends, I'm yeah. so with excited Venom. For yeah. the well, not even with Venom, but Peter's status quo at the yeah. end of No Way Home sets up a lot of really cool stuff for the idea of who or what Spider-Man could be. So it's just exciting. We're at a point right now, I think, as Phase 4 enters the second phase of phase four. as we get into the back half of phase four of the MCU, we're seeing that there are no more rules. Yeah. We don't have yeah. Cap. We don't have Tony, but we are going to have, we've got Sam, and we're going to have Riri. Who's Ironheart. So yeah. we have these characters filling in these roles. And that means something different.
It does.
We've got the Eternals who are doing a thing that looks really cool. We've got Wanda tapping into chaos magic. We've got Doctor Strange trying to patch together a broken world that he's kind of responsible for. We've got whatever's happening in Wakanda. We've got Nick Fury off in space.
Oh, yeah.
Everything.
Scrolls and Krees. And
it's so fun. Yeah. It's so fun. And if you don't like it, that's totally fine.
Sure.
Like maybe you hated Hawkeye, but you can go watch Eternals. Maybe you hated Eternals, but you could go watch Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
Do you have to watch everything? No. Am I going to? You bet.
Well, that brings me to a question. I'm sure you've seen or heard this 1,000 times and want to get your opinion on it.
Sure.
You've heard probably the hero genre is getting saturated.
Mm-hmm.
What's your point of view or your opinion on when you hear that? It's like, oh, there's just too much.
I think there's a point to that. But every superhero movie is not the same. If every superhero movie followed the exact same formula, I would agree. But they don't. There is a similar formula for an MCU movie, but you can go watch Wonder Woman 84. You could watch Spider-Man No Way Home. You could watch Iron Man 2. They're not the same. And I think the difference becomes movies that exist in a genre and movies that are stacked on top of each other. It's like when Westerns finally fell.
Yeah.
You were seeing a lot of very similar movies coming out, retreading a lot of the same grounds. There wasn't a lot of groundbreaking things happening. There wasn't a lot of new. It was a lot of the same.
Yeah.
And I do see why people believe it's saturated. But one thing that the MCU's been doing pretty consistently, and what we're starting to see DC do, and what we're seeing other movie houses do, is how can we make a superhero movie, but also make it fresh and make it different and make it interesting?
Yeah, they've really been able to tap into that. I agree. So,
but yeah, I think that's gonna have to do it for me today.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. I'll put your contact info in the show notes so that. You disagree with him, let him know. If you agree with him,
absolutely,
let him know, and we'll go from there. So thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Lee.
It was a great time sitting down and talking with Tim. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. So go to covertnerd.net for all the links in the episode. And until next time, nerd it up.